Hi, everyone. Welcome to the timingresearch.com crowd forecast news, episode number 327 for January 10th, 2022. We are recording this at 1 p.m. Eastern time. My name is David Cosmeter. I'm the creator of timingresearch.com, and you should be seeing my charts right now. So I'll be displaying, starting with the S&P 500 and then whatever else we talk about throughout the episode on there. So today I have arranged for Leslie Juflas, Wally Alipade, Eric Gebhardt for our guests for today, and the option professor as our moderator. And I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to him.
Okay, great. And a lot of action today, a lot of things going on. So basically, we'll have a very good show, get some viewpoints from three very good guests. So again, before we get started, we always introduce everybody and then we get started. So let's start out with Leslie. Leslie, a little background on yourself and what's going on at your company.
Hi. Well, good morning. Thanks for having me back again. Well, this wasn't too unexpected for the type of pattern recognition that I use, but we'll talk about that later. I'm Leslie Juflas, and my website is Trading Live Online, and I trade and teach trading. And lots going on in the markets right now.
And I really want to hear what you got to say, Leslie, because for people who didn't listen to the broadcast you were last on, you were using a Fibonacci number that came in right around 4810. And obviously 4818 is pretty close to 4810. So nobody's going to hold your feet to the fire for 8 points, right?
That was a heck of a
target that you put up there. And those who use that target as some area for making some decisions would be quite happy 200 points lower, right?
So, I would think so. Yeah, I was using the futures. I was using futures, and the futures was actually the 08.
Bottom line is, it was a great indicator. It was a great insight, and hopefully today you can give us some more. Okay. Next one up is Eric. Eric, a little background on the company down there, and a little background on yourself.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
Good to be here. Well, we are AltaVest, so we've been doing this since 1997. In the futures and options space. And quite a few years back, we developed some algorithms, some software and technology that allows us to, in particular, collect premium on S&P 500 options spreads. So that's kind of our specialty. So we use some automation in that regard, and we're looking to capture premium, collect premium on covered spreads, and then use some automation to, of course, not only enter the position, but manage the position on the way out. And that's kind of our focus on the futures indices, the stock indices, primarily the E-mini S&P 500, and to a lesser degree, the mini Russell and the mini NASDAQ 100.
Sure. And you guys have a lot to bring to the table. You know, we'll be very interested to hear Leslie and some of her Fib numbers. And with the VIX jumping into the 20s, we'd be liking to hear what you think of the volatility numbers. So we'll get to that sooner enough. Wally, background on yourself, please, and a little bit about what you guys are doing.
Absolutely. First of all, thank you guys again for having me on your show. Love being on your show every single time I come on. But yeah, what we do is we do swing trading and really just more so technical and quantitative analysis is really all we do. Predominantly what we try to focus on is what the market is going to do over the next 3 months, more than anything else. And so our goal is just to be on the right side of the market in that 3 month duration. And so we employ a lot of candlestick analysis. We use some tried and true technical analysis that a lot of people use as well, including just quantitative to kind of help us decide where we should be and where the market is going. So we've used that to call tops and bottoms multiple times over and over and over. And that's what we try to do. Buy at the bottom, sell at top.
And to your credit, when Tesla had that big drop before this last advance that it had, you definitely were all over that one. That was very accurate as well.
Thank you.
All right. Well, enough with the niceties here. Let's get into it. We've got the stock market today. I use SPX as a reference point. Open today at 4655. And we're going to go around and find out what you guys think the closing will be on Friday, be it up, down, or sideways, and what type of a confidence level you might have. So let's start out with Leslie, and let's see what you think 4655 means between now and Friday.
Yeah, well, there's some ratios that are a little bit farther down from here, about 45-25, 45-50-ish area. Mm-hmm. But I think if those hold support, I think that that's probably about where we might be somewhere this week. At the very end of the week, I'm really not sure. Just really have to see how that support area holds.
Right. But you think there's a potential that will, you know, be lower than 46.55?
I think that we will go lower than that. Mm-hmm. Based on this particular pattern that I'm tracking right now, it's got potential for down to about the mid 4,400.
And are we looking at probabilities of higher than 50-50, or what do you think?
Again, it depends on the support levels. You know, I follow the price action, and if we hold down here around this 45-50-ish, I would expect a bounce. I'm not expecting any new highs anytime soon. I think either we're going to go into a large range, but if we start breaking that support, I think that's going to be a sign that we've got some more serious problems in the markets.
Right. Okay. So, you know, that's pretty much what you're thinking. Generally, a little bit of a lower vibe, unless obviously these things hold and we reverse significantly, but that's not a high probability right this second.
No, I think we're going to testing mode.
We're in a testing more than the spiking right back up mode. Okay. What about Eric? What are you thinking here? 46.55 as the line in the sand?
All right. Well, I'm going to maybe put my neck out, which is not uncommon. But, you know, I think we're still somewhat in the maybe the investable bucket in terms of looking at the VIX and what's happening there. I know, obviously, we're a lot higher now than we were, say, a week ago. But, you know, having said that, I'm going to look for a run to 4,800 by the end of the week.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Yeah. There are some cycle guys who were saying that today is a cycle low. And so far, that looks pretty accurate. So, you know, there could be a reversal of fortune. And as you've been around, you do the technicals, but you at least keep your ear half open on the fundamentals, don't you?
Yeah, half an ear to the ground.
Ground. Well, you know, like I say, everyone is extremely looking for a terrible print on inflation, and they're not really thinking the earnings are going to be that great, I guess, with the banks. And so those are two news events that could take the technicals the other way too. Huh?
Yeah, there's certainly some politics at play too with the Powell's confirmation tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think he has a lot of incentive to, I guess, give the political landscape what it wants, which is kind of a recognition that it's not transitory inflation. I guess everything's transitory to some degree, but I think politicians are looking for him to, you know, at least give the appearance of addressing that.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's a whole nother.
And also that he's not the second coming of Paul Volcker. You
know? Right. From the 80s.
Yeah. Well, you know, when Volcker was tightening, you know, obviously that was as aggressive as it ever got. So obviously they're looking that he's not going to be going off the rails with the tightening.
Yeah, well, that could be a big policy mistake, tightening into slowing growth and so forth. So they want to avoid that for sure.
Also, we made a new high in the 10-year. And sometimes after you make a new high, you know, maybe it takes a rest and comes back down a bit. So that's possible, too.
Certainly.
And if interest rate, if yields did back off the 180, 190 area, you know, that would be helpful to some of this tech that really is hurting the indexes, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, the big run in the 10-year, as you know, for last week. And what are we approaching 1.9?
Yeah, 1.819. So, you know, if he started saying something that would be any kind of dovish with the positioning where it is now, you could get a swing. And that would be something that would get you going the other way. So
absolutely.
Wally, what are you seeing out there on the candlesticks and all the rest? Obviously, they got to look a little bit messy on most things, but it's a market of stocks. Is there any? Well, how do you feel about the S&P 4655?
Very good. So to me, I think it's one of those things where I don't have enough data just yet. It's very rare that that happens, but I would say we are closer to the bottom than anything else. So if we reverse, I won't be surprised. I'll just need a little bit more data. Maybe by tomorrow, I'll have an idea. But from candlestick perspective, that gap that we had today, that usually tends to get filled. And so for that reason, I said, if this gap gets filled, we should see things close higher. but the technical indicators are showing that we should be going lower. And so that's where I'm kind of like, ooh, where are we with this kind of thing? So at this stage, it's kind of clear. So if I had to pick one direction, mm-hmm. for now, I would say lower is what I would say until the technical shows me something more clarified that we're going higher. For right now, I don't see the technical saying we're going higher yet.
Yeah. I think Leslie and yourself are saying, you know, everything's pointing in that direction now, and the support is a little bit lower than where we were on the lows today. So obviously the preponderance of what we're looking at currently, you know, it's hard to talk about a different thing. You know what I mean? You know, the VIX did hit 23.33 and now we're at 21.90 and we're not at 45.80 anymore. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see where they take it home, and it'll be interesting to see turnaround Tuesday. Is there any turnaround Tuesday? And, you know, cause sometimes Tuesday, Thursday, you get some turnarounds.
Correct.
So there is a lot going on here. And like you say, a little bit more evidence wouldn't kill you before you give a verdict, right?
Absolutely. So let's put it this way. I'm not looking to start buying just yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you obviously this is kind of like catching a falling knife, which is a painful thing, but, you know, sometimes a turning point is always going to look like that, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, Leslie, you have indicators, and it'd be great to get your wider view on not only the S&P and what you're seeing, but also if there's any other, you know, fundamental or technical things going on that you are focused on.
Well, you know, that's interesting. Last time I was on, December 27th, we had talked about energy. And at that time, I had mentioned mm-hmm. that energy on what I use for analysis was still in a bearish range. But then just a couple of days later, I think about the first trading day of this year, that changed quickly. And now it's in a bullish range. So there's some stocks in the energy sector that I think they're a little bit extended now, mm-hmm. but I think people could be looking for potential short-term buys in those on pullback. Schlumberger, I think, is one of the stronger looking ones.
That had a heck of a time getting through the 29, 30, 31 area. So once that got taken out, that was really a very constructive thing, wasn't it?
Yes. I think so. And it's sort of just, you know, holding, it's barely positive today, but again, it's extended. And I think a bit of a pullback, some type of a retracement setup, I think would be.
Those numbers that I was talking to you about somewhere in the 31 might be something, or maybe not that bad.
That would be quite a pullback, I think, I'm not sure I'd want to see it go that deep. Yeah, with this last move up,
maybe a couple bucks.
Yeah. Maybe a 50% retracement at the most.
And do you ever look at longer term graphs? Because the amount of real estate above some of these stocks is tremendous.
That's true, and they've got a little bit of work to do to get through some of those new highs. But yeah, I think if some of them can make it through some of those new highs on the longer term charts on the weekly and monthly, Schlumberger up there around 36.90 ish. If it can make it through that, I think that would be very positive for it. The weekly chart is looking constructive on a mm-hmm. bullish perspective. See how that RSI, you've got your RSI on there. See how that's holding that range that we talked about last time. It's well above that 40, that 40 range. That's very, very bullish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like I say, there is a lot of action from years ago around 60. And I wonder out loud if that's its final destination on this run this year.
Well, that's the thing with trading anything. You never know what price will do, right? All you can do is manage the trades that you have.
But it does look more likely to go up to that neighborhood than down to 20.
Yeah, that was an area where, a large leg to the downside mm-hmm. had started some major support had broken right there. Yeah. So if it can get going to the upside, I think it would be reasonable to see it travel back up towards that area.
Yeah, I've also owned Halliburton, which seems to be a little bit stronger, and they're kind of the sister company, you know?
Yeah, I've got them. I had them on the list also when I was looking through some, and it had a nice, gap up a few days few days ago. So I think we'd have to hold that 24 area on any test down. If it came down, closed, and went through that gap, I don't think that would be constructive from a bullish point of view.
And that would probably be corresponding to maybe a crack in the oil prices themselves.
Could be, yes.
Yeah. All right, well, that's very interesting. Let's turn it over here to Eric. Eric, you know, you got the VIX up in the 20s. When you get the VIX up into the 20s and you're a writer, you know, that's pretty much a fat roast beef sandwich sometimes, you know?
Yeah, it's a bit of a sweet spot, really. So, yeah, we're, you know, we don't really shy away from this type of activity. It really kind of suits our needs quite well. So, you know, we're looking obviously at the broader movement and the indices, and you know, oftentimes we're non-directional in nature, which might sound a little bit bizarre to some, but you know, we're looking for markets to stay sometimes in a wide range, so we have kind of a large margin of error on what we're doing above and below the market. So you know, I think the VIX, of course, kind of drives you know, well, I don't know. Is it the chicken and egg? Is the VIX driving sentiment or sentiment driving the VIX? I'm not sure. But nonetheless, you get a lot of value. You can capture a lot of premium with the VIX in this range. And of course, the risk would be if it continues to escalate and spikes higher, then that would put what we do under a bit of pressure.
Yeah.
But, you know, having said that, this is really a bit of a sweet spot for us. And as we've seen, I don't know, countless times in the last, let's just say, at least 2 years, oftentimes, you know, the VIX inflates and then subsequently the machines come in and everything goes back to kind of the routine, which is, you know, buy the dip. So that's been the mechanism at play here. That's been the pattern. And of course, at some point that'll break down. But at the moment, that seems to be more likely the case than not. I mean, these types of things don't typically turn on a dime, but at some point they will, and sentiment will change, and you know, you'll end up with the VIX being elevated for a period of time, and that would be more of a rough going just for not only what we do, but probably most people too. When you get, you know, highly elevated VIX levels, that makes it difficult to navigate, for sure.
Well, liquidity should improve as the month goes on because of two factors. One is the earnings are going to come out, and they probably are going to be pretty darn good because the operating leverage is still there and people are out there spending money still. And the second thing is new money coming in, you know, they're probably going to want to place the money. So the liquidity between earnings, giving people a little bit of a pause that it's not so bad, and B, the new money coming in from pensions, et cetera, you know, could have a much more calming effect here between the third week of January and February 10th, which is really, you know, a month away.
Well, not only that, but one quick comment, sort of the inverse of that would be, I know that from a lot of the excuse my frog here in my throat. Jumped.
Everybody's
in my throat
got a here. Little, right? It is January.
But I, you know, from what I've been able to ascertain, and keeping my one ear to the ground in terms of the narratives and what's happening with large institutions and hedge funds and whatnot, you know, there's been a lot of forced selling in the last year, and even up till probably as we speak. And at some point, you know, that degrossing, as they call it, does subside.
Yeah.
And, you know, that makes room for sort of what you suggested as well, for the new money to find its way, because it's, as you know, it's got to find a way to park it, a place to park itself where it's going to do better than, you know, what.
Yeah. I mean, no matter what people say about interest rates, you're getting zero on money market.
Right.
And if you bought bonds, you're either making no interest or you're losing money and making no interest. So,
and you're losing more than the headline suggests.
Yeah. You're way past your coupon.
Right.
So, and then of course, like I say, the proliferation of risky debt out there just went nuts in the last year. So, yeah, I mean, they have to do something with the money because these pension plans owe money to people, and you know, they're going to need to have some attempted return. So, daylight today, you got to know that there's no buyers, so there's a liquidity crisis, right? And there's a buyer's, what do you call that? A boycott. And after a boycott, sometimes it comes back. So that's a bit. But let's just talk real quick about something, Eric, is when you're doing the option writing, you know, obviously you're trying to take advantage of the time decay. Can you give a ballpark of what kind of a time frame you sell? Is it 1 week, 2 months, 1 month? What's your sweet spot there?
Sure. I can give you some examples without going on and on about it.
Yeah.
Of course, a lot of it depends on the volatility and some other elements as well in terms of how much time we're selling, because
right.
if you have the VIX elevated, then you can sell less time and capture even more value
right.
and be actually even further away from the market, meaning your risk is presumably a bit lower. So, today, for example, we have some trades within our platform that have anywhere from 22 to 68 days till expiration.
Right.
So that's a good example. And some of the strikes might be as low as down close to 4,000
right.
on the E-mini S&P.
Right.
And up above 5,000 on the calls.
Right.
So, and it just depends.
Reasonable window.
Yeah. I 90%+ of the time, it will be a reasonable window.
Yeah. So I'm saying reasonable doesn't mean assured.
Right, right. So these are
reasonable.
We like to consider them as higher probability outcomes.
Right,
and right. and that's what the math says.
Yeah, yeah. So that's interesting. And then, like I say, because the VIX is high, you can go a little further out of the money, because the concept is to try to make sure that your strike price doesn't get tagged and that the time runs out. So if you can hit those two objectives, that's what your objectives are. And obviously a little further out of the money is going to be more difficult for the market to get to than obviously logically a closer one.
Right. We want to stay hidden.
Yeah. And the VIX getting high allows you to widen up.
Exactly. So
that's good. Okay. Wally, what are you seeing as a fundamental or technical stuff? And do you have anything specific on your radar?
Absolutely. Yeah. So right now, I think I kind of like agree with what Leslie's saying. Energy stock is showing some really great opportunities. Mm-hmm. I think anybody who's interested in capturing, let's put it this way, you know how every year there's always something out there, like, you know, last year was cryptocurrencies and meme stocks. Energy is beginning to set up somewhat to that extent, where I would not be surprised that by the end of this year, energy is one of the best performing sectors that we see out there. So things are really picking up over there from what we've seen. And so I think anybody focusing on that area should not ignore that. And even if we can't catch, maybe because the rally had took place a week ago, but watch that periodically throughout the year, because from a long-term perspective, it has the potential to do well for the rest of this year.
So okay.
That's definitely something we're looking at.
Yeah. And that's energy. You know, another area that I have noticed for myself that has done very well and is holding up pretty good today is high dividend stocks. Is there any high dividend stocks that you're looking at all?
Very interesting. No, not really. If there was anything else that we looked at was the financial sector.
Okay.
Was probably another thing. So I'm not sure if there's any high dividend stocks in there, but I'm glad you mentioned that. I'll probably have to go back and look at those and see what's going on with high dividend stocks.
Yeah, because the top 10 holdings of like SPYD is Coke and Broadcom and Pfizer and Merck and Cisco and Pepsi and Home Depot and things like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, all those stocks that you mentioned are they're doing pretty well right now. No signs of weaknesses on those. I mean, obviously, we're having a pullback right now, and that's to be expected. You know, like,
but these also have popped pretty good since January 1.
That's correct. That's correct.
So, and
that's
the fact that they're not giving much back is not a bad sign. You know,
it's not at all. It's not at all. So, you know, we can expect markets to pull back a little bit. We had a decent first week, you know, where some of these stocks did well. And so, yeah, slow down a little bit, catch his breath before the next rally up higher. The one thing I would say is I'm not seeing a bearish market. Let's put that out there. You know, so if anybody thinking, oh, we're going to have a 2008 financial crisis type of stuff, Armageddon. No, I don't see that in the charts, at least not yet.
No. Although those areas that Leslie was talking about, you know, 4,400, 4,450 or 4,500 even, you know, breaking those levels would certainly get the audience, excited.
Yeah, without a question, without a question. And like she said, too, and I agree with that, too. We have to look at some of these support levels. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you watch those to see if we are actually going to bounce off of there or break those. Right now, from what it's looking at, even that 50 moving average that you have on there, that blue line that you see right there, I mean, it's not unreasonable for it to dip below it and come right back up by tomorrow. And this is why I said I have to wait till tomorrow and see. But if it did the same thing like it did just the low prior to that, which was, I'm not sure what date that was, but the most recent low, yeah, right there. Exactly. I mean, if it ends, literally the same candlestick that we had on that red bottom there is what we're seeing happening right now. That's what you call a hammer candlestick. And that's usually a reversal. So the only difference is the day is not over yet. So we don't know if it's going to end exactly that. But if it ends like that, then chances are we could probably see a reversal as early as tomorrow. So it's nothing to count out just yet. Now, my only concern would be, like, let's look at that RSI that you have right there. I don't like the fact that the RSI took out that low.
No way.
Same level. Mm-hmm. Okay, so usually that could be a sign, a warning sign, an alert that there's some smoke in the building that, hey, that should not be happening if we're still in a good uptrend. So
now, I'm not a candlestick expert, but does that look like a long stem here today? And what does that mean?
Well, that just means that, you know, there's a lot of buying pressure. So sellers try to take it down and they brought it down to certain levels and the buyers realize, hey, it's time to start jumping back in. And so usually when you see that stem, it's called a hammer. That's what it's called. That's usually a reversal signal. Chances are very high, especially if that's occurring in some type of support area. Chances are very high that you'll see things start reversing from that point on. Mm-hmm. And so seeing that, if it ends that way today, that's the only thing we have to wait. But if it ends like this, like if we take a snapshot right now, and this is how the market ends today, then I would say the probability of the reversal is even higher now.
And then if we get above the blue line, which is 46.40, that would add more credence.
Yeah, exactly. And that would be my confirmation then. So then I'll wait till tomorrow to see if we can end above that blue line with a green candle. And if we do, it's like,
then you have to change the station.
Exactly. Back up the truck and pawn your kids to the pawn shop and use all the money you can to put it back into the market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because like I say, the liquidity should be improving dramatically in the weeks ahead between next week and February 10th when all the earnings come out. And, you know, there is a lot of negativity here, as you can see from the VIX jumping up into the mid-20s almost. So,
yeah. I'll mention on the earnings that you mentioned too, you know, I heard you say this earlier with banks. Banks are coming out with earnings and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that we should definitely pay attention to because, you know, with all this interest rate stuff and all that kind of stuff, banks are showing that signs that there's a lot of money flowing into those. Mm-hmm. So I would not be surprised that earnings comes out to be really good for banks, which would just potentially even drive markets even higher. But I would say watch out for those because I'll be shocked. Let's put it that way. I'll be very shocked if banks' earnings comes out and it's bad. Like,
no.
The
only thing is sometimes I've been told that they bid up into the earnings and then after the earnings, they actually sell off. It's kind of like a buy the rumor, sell the fact. So there's a little bit of risk. There's a little risk of that as well.
Very true. Actually, that is very true. I have statistics to prove that. Very, very true. And so one of the things I always tell people is you have two choices on how you want to play that. If you're a longer term person like myself, which is 3 months, just stick it out. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
However, if you're not, then I say definitely the very first sign of things going down after earnings, especially after earnings, get out and then give it about 3 weeks and you'll be shocked to see how what happens.
Or it might be time to consider some covered call writing or something like that.
Very good. Very good. Yeah. Very good.
Leslie, you did mention energy, but you are not a one trick pony. So what other sectors do you like besides energy?
Well, interesting. I was looking at the 30-year bond today on the futures chart, and it has completed in my world what's called a large AB equals CD buy pattern and right down just above the 154 area. And so there's also support for that from last March and April. So it looks to me like that might be ready for a bounce to the upside. And then silver also.
Well, which hold it? Just repeat that because I was looking at the chart changing. What was the market again that you think might be?
Oh, that's the 30-year bond. I'm looking at the futures.
So the yields went up towards 215 here and whatever it was. And you're thinking there could be a purchase opportunity now?
I'm looking at the futures chart on this, and it's an AB equals CD buy pattern, and it's got support also from March of 2021, right down in this area. And it looks as though it might be making the same candle pattern that Wally was just talking about, the long-legged hammer. Yep. And now the thing with those, Wally, you probably know this too, like on the S&P chart we were just talking about, on that, if that closes like that, and then you have that long tail below, that can also be, if it takes that out, that low out, then it's like a reversal pattern.
Absolutely.
I love that particular candle pattern because of that. You can use it in both directions. So it becomes an important area of support to watch, but it looks like the 30-year bond is close to making a very similar candle pattern today, but we'll have to see what it looks like at the close.
Yeah. And there's no way to get the futures up there, David. It's you just got the yield up there, because obviously if you're thinking the bonds would rise, you're saying that this yield up here at 215 or whatever would back off. Because obviously,
that's right.
The yield has to come down if you're going to get an up move on it.
That's right. I think you might be able to look at the chart of TLT.
TLT is a proxy. Exactly.
It's similar. Yeah. It's not exactly the same. The futures looks a little bit better as far as that pattern structure goes to me.
Well, that's giving you a little bit of a green bar today.
Mm-hmm.
And
but it looks like maybe a bounce. I'm not,
nothing to get party hats highs. Out, but calling off.
But
the door,
maybe 382 to 0.50 retracement on that.
Yeah. And you see the RSI went into a very oversold deal.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And so that's that area. And what was the other one you were saying?
Silver. The ETF for silver today kind of caught my eye.
SLV.
It had a gap down a couple of days ago, but it's sort of right down at the lower end of a larger range that started in 2020. So it's, close to those lows there. There's the gap. You can see that gap from a few days ago. So I would be watching that gap to see if it finds resistance on, if it closes that gap and it does act as resistance and it turns down from there. But if it does come and close above that gap, I would take that as a bullish sign and then be watching for, whatever you use for entry signals.
Is that a fairly large divergence, you think, on the RSI between where we are turning up and
where we are now?
Like it's significantly higher than it was in December.
Well, it's I don't see an RSI divergence on that because it didn't make a lower low below the low a couple of days ago.
Yeah, you're
RSI, as you mentioned, is still sitting at a 40 range on that low. So that's a bullish range, but it has to hold that. It has some work to do. There's no particular pattern that I see on the RSI right now with it. So that price, as the price kind of oscillates back and forth, if you watch the RSI with it, if price comes down, makes a lower low, the RSI is still holding higher, then you do get a positive divergence. That would be a good sign. But for now, I would be watching that gap to see how price reacts.
Can we put up Microsoft? And I'd love to have you give an idea on Microsoft, because it's really getting down into a lower level. I was seeing some moving averages at 298. And obviously, this is a
more candle. Solid
company generally, right?
Yeah, I'm from the Seattle area. So we always like to look at Microsoft.
Yeah, sure.
See what's happening. Well, Microsoft hit a 618 retracement today. And as did some of the indexes on this move to the downside. So some support there. But again, I would just be looking for a bounce maybe to the upside. I just don't see it yet going, to new highs. So I think some of these, again, just watching the price action to see, are we now going into a ranging type of environment with Microsoft?
Right.
Or the other question is the lows from the late November and mid December, and then even the low where the gap was back from October. You can see that area support. Did we have a break to the downside from a range. So if price comes back up around just above that 300 level on Microsoft, it's not able to get further than that, then I would say that range.
And you might even look at that and say 290, 320 for the shorter term would probably might be a range for it.
Well, no, the range is there. And the question is, has it broken that range? And this test up is going to give us an answer to that.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So a test up around just above 300, like 310-ish to 15, 315 is what I would be using.
Sure.
If it's not able to get above that, turns back to the downside, then we might be able to use a measured target move on Microsoft to the downside.
Let's hit a couple more Seattle guys since we're talking local here. How about hitting Amazon and Starbucks?
Oh, I'm sorry. Someone else. Go ahead.
No, I was going to have you take care of these because they're local to you.
They're local. Yes. Yeah. And I'm surprised just from my Amazon deliveries alone that this stock is not higher. Mm-hmm. But I've been bearish on Amazon for quite some time because of the bearish patterns that it's made. I don't see a bullish pattern yet. Yeah. It started making, sell patterns that I started following all the way back in October of 2020. And even though it went higher, it still continued to make bearish patterns. The last one completed in the middle of November, still having a sell-off from that. But it looks to me like Amazon's it really going into a very large sideways range. And it's probably going to be testing down
$3,000, $2,900.
Yes, exactly. And I think from there, if it holds that support, it's just going to be testing back and forth with big swings, which is great for shorter term traders that would make really nice. Options traders can do a lot with that.
And Starbucks kind of gave it up, tried to go to 116, and they said, forget that. And SBUX.
Yes. Yes. Again, I'm surprised.
I buy that stuff every week in the grocery store. Anyway. Little sleeves, get those sleeves, take them home, Italian
get the
roast.
Sleeves, and I like the pumpkin spice lattes.
Yeah. But again, apparently not enough people like them. I don't know.
Has the appearance of a head and shoulder type pattern.
Yeah.
With the head being from July, left shoulder back from April, and it could be, starting to break a trend line from there. If it holds the support back up again, a large range.
Yeah, I think what your point was on that we could be, continuing to probe lower comes from the fact that Facebook, Amazon, Microsoft, and now Apple, a little dodgy, $14 off its high. We're not going to get these indexes going up through the roof if those guys don't get on the horse, right? Because they represent so much of a weight.
Exactly. Yeah.
So that's the thing you have to be careful of if you're looking for the index to do the wonderful things. Well, then these stocks better, stop doing what they're doing.
And I think some testing back up. I think, seeing a short-term rally to the upside is certainly a reasonable. I don't think we're going anywhere close to new highs. I think it's testing and then more down.
4650, 4700 will be a tough neighborhood to get through.
On the S&P?
Yeah. 4650, 4700, a tough neighborhood to get through.
Yeah, I think if it does get above that, there again, speaking of candles, there's a big down candle from January 5th, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
Wally, you probably use this technique, but about halfway, about the midpoint of a big, large, real body like that should be very good resistance. So I think if it gets what looks like a strong rally to the upside, I would be looking at that area for a short opportunity.
All right, Eric, the Russell is one of the indexes you follow. I think they're kind of hard to work with the options, though, for liquidity purposes. Isn't the bid offers kind of a rough racket on the Russell?
Yeah, I would say, generally speaking, the Russell is our least traded E-mini index for various reasons, but one of them would be, such as you suggested there, the volumes, liquidity, it's not as deep as the ES. But beyond that, of course, it's just more volatile. So we like to trade in the index that maybe has as little volatility as possible, making what we do a little more of a higher probability bet. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the Russell chart has kind of been on an island, I would say. It's been a bit of a mess.
It was one of the great head fakes of all time, to be honest. it was 2300 on the Russell or IWM 230, and it couldn't get above it. And they blew through it. And then, boy, did they hook them. Because as soon as they blew through it, they put 100 points on it, and then they've just killed it since then. You know?
Oh yeah, and I mean, last couple of months or so, it's been in the chop bucket, as we say.
Yeah.
So that's a difficult one to trade, and but even just kind of touching on what Leslie mentioned and Wally mentioned too on the technicals, you know, one thing too, and in terms of the candlesticks, which you know I like to glance at too. I think those can be very visual at a glance, you can kind of glean a lot of information, but even just on a technical pattern, you have consolidation, and oftentimes you have a bull market and you have some consolidation along the top, but you know, the longer that consolidation plays out, you know, the less likely you're going to have a continuation pattern without falling at least below the bottom of that consolidation for a period of time. And like you called it, a head fake, and probably stopping out a lot of longs along the way and then moving back up. So, you know, looking at that Amazon chart you showed 5 minutes ago, I mean, that's a heck of a consolidation there that we've been in for a period of time. But that was just kind of an observation I had after looking at those few charts. And just another quick comment too, this popped into my head that, And who's to say exactly if this is accurate or not, but I think it's probably pretty close, because everything I've read, people I've talked to about institutional trading and, you know, large algos large institutions with their algos moving the markets. I think it's Lizanne Saunders. I think I read from her a quote. I think of David Siegel from, I think they manage like 80 billion in quantitative funds and money, but something like 80 to 90% of market moves are algo driven these days, or machine driven. So, you know, you kind of have to keep that in mind. You know, that's why the exit door can get small at times. And, you know, they're all running for the exits at the same times. And it's all kind of machine driven, or driven by the boss of a money manager that says, you know, you're down 2% this month, you've got to close out your positions, you know, so There's some other dynamics in play too. And of course, that's all narrative based and hard to keep track of, but it is something to be mindful of, I think.
They obviously are pressing the volume. You know, when there's no buy volume, they can see that, and they press them and they press them. If there's no sell volume, they press them. And that's why these moves get exacerbated,
right?
Because there are people out there with the machines that are pressing the volume.
Yeah. And then one other comment too, real quickly, you mentioned the tech shares. As well. I think maybe the number is a little bit different now, but generally speaking, I believe the five largest tech companies are 25% of the market cap in the S&P. So, you know, I mean, that's not like a profound insight, but you really have to, sometimes it's easy to forget that. And, you know, if those companies, I think it's Leslie mentioned, if they're not participating, then, you know, the indexes are certainly going to struggle. Maybe you'll have some financials picking up the slack at times, but you know, you really have to have buy-in on the tech.
Yeah. Now I'm going to get a couple of questions for you, because I think they're interesting to get your viewpoint on. General commodities, they had a very big year last year. There's supposed to be a cyclical low from March 2020 that may last for years. Now we have stalled out after good runs in things like soybeans and corn and wheat. We definitely are at the higher end of the range in crude. Gold is like fixed at 1800 plus or minus $50. You've got the softs definitely stabilizing after having huge advances in sugar and coffee. And the dollar is, you know, fairly firm, but still, you know, hanging around 96. What is your feeling on commodities as a general thing? I mean, has the highs been in, and are we going to contract in commodities as they tighten money and credit? Or is there some structural shortages and the demand supply dynamic of this stuff means that there's more legs to come? What do you think on the commodity sector?
Yeah, just on a broader note, and this is not meant to be too glib, but I think a little bit humorous as well, but I think there's some truth to it. I think this weekend, Barron's big cover story, on basically commodity inflation.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think they're late. I think a lot of the money's been made.
Yeah.
Okay. The easy money on on the rally. So yeah.
Yeah. I mean, beans go from 8 to 17. Going from 13 to 26 is going to be a rough racket.
Yeah, absolutely. I think generally speaking, that's our approach and that's our theme. That's sort of our outlook at the moment.
One of the casualties of withdrawing stimulus and running off the balance sheet is going to be commodity inflation, in your view.
Yeah. And I think you could have a CPI this week could be actually decelerating.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, because the PMI report is indicating that some things like the bottlenecks and stuff are easing and that kind of stuff.
Right. And I think, you know, the mainstream media, the financial press and whatnot. I mean,
yeah.
When have they ever been ahead of the curve and front run a market? So I don't, you know, by the time, by the time we're reading it and absorbing it, you know, the market's moved on to something else.
All right, let's go over to the second question, which is on a general basis, nothing specific, on a general basis, when you put on an option spread, you know, what are some of the things that give you the exit time? Is it it hits the strike price? Is it the premium goes to a certain level? Is it how much time's left on the option? You know, what are some of the triggers?
No, good question.
Yeah.
First of all, any spread that we place, we're always going to close it out before expiration,
mm-hmm.
for better or for worse. So we have our triggers that are going to tell us to close it out. And if we take a loss, we take a loss. And if it's a gain, it's a gain. So we don't try to squeeze every last bit of juice out of the trade. There's just not enough benefit. You know, if you have a couple of weeks of time left and maybe you've captured, you know, 80% of your maximum total potential at that point, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I know a lot of times clients and people, that's kind of counterintuitive because they think, oh, well, there's only a week of time left and this thing is, you know, so far deep out of the money, it'll never give me trouble.
Right.
But don't ever say never, because it can, and it's just not worth the extra risk of trying to squeeze the, you know, an extra $50 out of a trade when you could have just closed it out and taken your winner and moved on. But generally
and your margin that you have tied up to make such a little amount also is nonsensical.
Absolutely. You're basically tied to your hands because now you have no opportunity to enter a new position.
Right.
So you have an opportunity cost there too. But so in a general term, what we do is we look, we've kind of built the machine to kind of make those decisions for us, but we have various inputs such as, like you kind of hit on them. We're looking at volatility. We're looking at time, theta decay, you know, days to expiration. We're looking at proximity among the strikes and so forth. Mm-hmm. And so that'll basically run through a analysis and give us our answer as to when we hit a profit signal or a risk signal. And once we do, we can then automate that for the client as well, so they don't have to screen watch and babysit and monitor the position.
Do you tend to roll a position if it's not working out, or do you tend to
Rarely.
Close it out, go to the sideline and see what the lay of the land is before you put a new one on?
Right. It's more of the latter. So we rarely roll. I think rolling ends up occupying your senses and kind of becoming wedded to a particular trade that really is just a losing trade, and you've given it a different name.
Right.
So I think it's better to take your losses and then have a clear head and move on to the next trade. And
yeah, because if you get tapped on something, there's a reason for it. And who are you to say that the reason you got tapped on, it's going to go away magically? So going to the next level down is your antidote. What it could be is gasoline on the fire.
That's right. And then real quickly, I've seen it. This is actually a presentation I saw someone else doing similar kinds of spreads. We do something called a dragonfly, which we actually created several years ago. It's a variation on a condor, an iron condor spread.
Right.
But essentially, you're capturing premium by selling call spreads and put spreads above and below the market.
Right.
But we saw someone demonstrate, they rolled a position, I believe it was 12 times. And by the end of the whole thing, the person was just, they said that whole trade, that whole experience over several months of time just completely exhausted them.
Yeah.
even though it came out a winner. But that's no way to trade for the average person.
If you're from back east, it's kind of like shoveling the snow while the snow's still coming down. You know, you're going to find out, hey, I just shoveled the driveway and it's already filled up again. You know what I mean?
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's great. Let's turn over to Leslie here real quick. And then Wally, to get some final thoughts on anything you'd want to specifically target. You went over the T-bonds, which I think is very interesting. And then you obviously were talking about energy on a pullback. And do you have, I didn't hear you say much about financials. Are you kind of still keen on that area?
I really can't say right now. I haven't really look at them hard enough for today.
But so your T-bonds and energy, is there anything in addition to the T-bonds and energy you'd like to bring to the forefront?
No, I think that's in the indexes. It's a lot to keep track of this week.
Sure. We don't need to have a Costco portfolio, right?
right.
All right. And Wally, did you have a couple that you wanted to throw up there? Because I don't think I really heard any specifics out of you, and you're not going to get out of here without giving us some specifics here, you know?
No, actually, I think I'm with Leslie because, like I said, energy is there. So Bank of America, JP Morgan Chase, maybe if anything, regional banks, if people pay attention to regional banks, they'll see a lot of opportunities there. So we're looking at that now. You mentioned technologies. And so a couple of things with technology stocks. We are seeing signs that things are not looking good. I was looking at the chart of Amazon, wasn't looking good. And this is even on a bigger time frame. So I will not be surprised if they stay in that sideways range for quite some time. Okay. Microsoft, it's interesting because on the daily chart of Microsoft, it's literally at a support level where it's supposed to bounce. So the key here with Microsoft would be if it bounces, great. If it doesn't, look out below is what I
said. What about Facebook real quick? Can we put up Facebook? Because that one's getting nailed pretty good. And that didn't look very good technically, but there's a big stem on it today.
There's a big stem on it today. But what I'm doing is I'm looking at the bigger timeframes and trying to just see where are we going. Yeah, where are we going? So Facebook is okay for now, but I would say Amazon, not so. And then, you know, I know a lot of people were talking about Cathie Wood's ARK fund. I'll say
they've had a rough time of it.
They had a rough time. I just stay clear of those for now. I mean, I just that's the best advice I can give anybody.
We could be setting up a divergence on RSI because Leslie, do you see that as a potential? You know, you definitely are making a new low here and the RSI is kind of not making a new low. What do you think, Leslie?
Oh, I was talking to myself because I was muted.
That's okay.
It could make a bullish divergence on the RSI. However, it is in a the RSI is definitely in a bearish range. So those last peaks would have to definitely be exceeded with some strength with price. So in other words, just right now, you know, maybe a bounce if there's a bullish divergence.
Yeah, a dead cat bounce towards 90 and then we'll see what happens. Something like
The poor kitty. Yeah.
If it can cross 100 on that, then maybe.
Okay. Yeah. So. But again, Wally, you're more from the school of you want to be in this thing between August and 2021. You know what I mean? You want to be in stuff where the lines are pointing up and, you know, and the RSI is above 50. You're not trying to be, some explorer looking for land. You know what I mean?
Absolutely not. Hey, we try to go with a trend, and that's a very good way of saying that we call that healthy stocks. And so when the stock is healthy, you can't go wrong with those. You know, we're not looking for, like you said, exploring free lands or something like that. Yeah.
You're not Ponce de Leon. You know what I mean?
Not at all. Not at all. We Wally de Leon.
Wally de Leon. Hey, it's expensive to be Ponce de Leon. Every time you get one land, you also lost 50 people on the boat who starved looking for the land, right?
Exactly.
All right, we're getting to the top of the hour, so it's time to wrap it up and let people know again who you are, but also how they can contact you and if there's any special deals you'd like to give out. So let's start out with Leslie. And again, just a quick background, and then, of course, what you'd like people to know.
Well, thank you again for inviting me back. My website is Trading Live Online, and you'll find courses on there if you'd like to learn some of the pattern recognition that I've talked about today. Almost all of these big stocks that we've talked about today, Microsoft, Facebook, Amazon, they all started having bearish patterns way back into last summer. And so that's one reason I use these patterns is because they will form while everybody is still in this case, bullish mode, but I'm seeing these bearish patterns. Mm-hmm. But I will be having a special on the introduction to pattern recognition, and I will be emailing out a special for that. It's usually $99, and I teach all of the structures. If you just hit the trading courses on there, and I then go down to introduction to trading with pattern recognition. That one right there, that's going to be a lot of information on learning the structures of these. So I'll be taking, that's $99 normally, and I'll be sending out an email for $79 on that. And it's a good way to find out if you like this style of trading without, you know, committing a lot of money, but you'll get a lot of education with it.
The other thing is, and when people come to you and they have their own stocks, can you do an analysis? Do you have some kind of a situation like that as well? Because that might be very helpful to people who, you know, right now we're trying to figure out they're holding on to, are they holding on to time bombs? Or are they holding on to a quality situation that the bloom just has come off the rose a little bit?
Yes, I do individual analysis for people, and depending on what their needs on, it will depend on, you know, if they just want one stock looked at, then they're probably best to sign up under what I call trading tracks, and you can sign up for like an hourly session, and we can go over charts together, or I can help you with some trading issues that you're having.
Yeah, everybody's trading on their own, but you know, Schwab, Fidelity, and Vanguard, they're not going to knock on your door if you're in the wrong stuff. I mean, you're just going to live and die by the sword. So,
that's,
you know,
right.
Sometimes it's nice to have an outside person to go over some stuff and give you a vantage point that you might be missing.
Yes. And that's how I learned this.
Yeah, exactly.
I learned it that way. Yes.
All right, Eric, how are we going to go over to AltaVest and find out more about your approach? And again, if people are, you know, having some trouble with their own situations, how you might be able to help them there as well.
Right. Well, I think the best thing would be right there on the right-hand side of the screen. There's a link for the one-touch trade alerts. So that's a great introduction to what we do and the types of option spreads that we work with. So someone could just sign up and we'll get you a demo account so you can use our ThetaTrader software along with our one-touch trade alerts, which are pretty unique. They're integrated with your trading account so you don't have to log into a separate platform and try to transpose and copy an alert that you might receive with an email or text message. So everything is integrated with our technology. And I think that's a good way to follow along. So once those trades are filled, ThetaTrader tracks it, monitors it, and can then automatically close out that trade for you. So you can follow along in demo mode.
Yeah. And again, for a diversified portfolio, this might be suitable for part of it. And it also is a credit strategy. So people who are trying to increase cash flow with part of their portfolio, this is something they could take a look at and see if it's right for them as well, right?
Absolutely. It's what we call non-correlated to a large degree. So it doesn't really matter what direction the stock market's moving.
Right.
And of course, it's generating collecting premium. So it's a bit of an income trading type of approach.
Yeah, that's the objective, really.
Yep.
Okay, great, Eric. Always great. And you know, like you've been in there so long. I mean, people should call just to find out again how this works and also to talk to you directly and take advantage of what you could bring to the table because your expertise goes over decades.
Yeah, thank you. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I've been in options a long time, and I can tell just by speaking to you, you're sharp, and people should at least pursue this and find out what they can do.
We'd be glad to talk to anybody.
Sure. Okay. And Wally, again, for the people that maybe want to look at it on a more of a 90-day time frame and maybe be more trend following, this would obviously be good for them. So tell everybody what they could do with you.
Sure. So a couple of things. First is if you see where it says right side platform, members can go over there, log in. We offer a platform. And so we can, this is how we use everything that we've learned as far as our technical analysis is actually in that platform. So people can, you know, contact us if they want to get access to that platform. We'll give them access to that. They can use that to help them with their analysis. But more than anything else, I'll say, we have a report that we write every week. I just finished writing a report. And this time we wrote about what we saw as far as sectors, industries, and stocks that are looking really, really good for 2020. And so anybody who is not a member of ours that wants to get a copy of this, if you email us, you're not on our email list, you contact us. We'll give you that copy absolutely for today. That's our special for today. Just go to info right side trade and say, hey, can I get a copy of the right side report? And we just finished writing it. And so it's ready to go. So if you send it, we won't ask any questions. We'll just send you a copy. You can read that, see what sectors we're looking at that is telling us you want to be invested in. This is where we are going to be invested in. And what stocks we also look into as well. We'll do that for your members.
Sure. Great. As far as optionprofessor.com, you can go to our website, and we do have two portfolios that you can gain access to. There'll be links there. And basically, you can get the links by putting your email address in. And we just send out an alert because, again, with the action today, I thought it was very wise to give a little bit of our perspective. It's nice to have perspective when the market gets extremely volatile. So we did send that out. So it's optionprofessor.com. Check it out. And again, it was great to have Leslie, Eric, and Wally here today. I think we covered a lot of stuff. And in this kind of an environment, it's nice to get a different viewpoints here and there. So thank you guys for coming. And I hope everybody got educated in some way, shape, or form. And we'll be back with you the next time we have the show. Right now, I'm going to send it back to David Kosmider to close it up.
Have a nice day, guys.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Yeah, a ton of good info today. So just a quick reminder for everyone, be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube or your favorite podcast app, or you can just come to timingresearch.com. And this post right here at the top of the page will become the archive as soon as I can get everything processed and updated, and that's permanently available on the site. So just want to thank my guests again for today, Leslie Jufloss of TradingLiveOnline.com, Wally Alapade of RightSideTrading.com, Eric Gebhardt of AltaVest.com, and the Option Professor of OptionProfessor.com. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Happy New Year, everyone.